Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff in for Alan Chartok on this Medical Monday. In the studio this afternoon to discuss urology is Dr. Paul Pietro of Premier Medical Group of the Hudson Valley. Dr. Pietro earned his Doctor of Medicine degree from the University of Virginia School of Medicine and was a resident of both general surgery and urologic surgery at Vanderbilt University Medical Center in Nashville, Tennessee. He specializes in general urology, including the treatment of kidney stones, surgical kidney cancer management, BPH, and PSA screening. Dr. Pietro, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you've done the show several times.
Two.
And
two
I've
before.
Done it maybe three times for
Excellent.
Alan, so we'll get through it.
We're experts.
To be part of today's conversation, give us a call now, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, or you can go to our Facebook page. Obviously, facebook.com/WAMC radio. You'll find a Facebook Vox Pop post there. Or you can tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop. Or once again, you know, it's nice on a call-in show to have some calls. So the number is 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Pietro, PSA screening is in the billboard here. Why the controversy?
So we've been using it for 20 years or so. I guess it came out in the 90s.
All right, first tell everybody what it is, those who don't know.
Right, so PSA, prostate-specific antigen.
Okay.
It's a protein that our prostate gland makes. It's part of our sexual functioning. It helps with getting people pregnant.
Okay.
So, got discovered that as people's PSA rose, they had an increased risk, perhaps, of prostate cancer. And so we've been using that as a screening test to find prostate cancer early in its course. Sounds great?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, over the 20 years we've been using this, we've dropped the death rate from prostate cancer almost in half.
Right.
Sounds wonderful.
That's all good.
A lot fewer guys now present with really advanced disease. So they don't show up, oh my gosh, with really advanced stuff. They now show up earlier.
The fatalities are down?
So decreased morbidity and mortality.
Morbidity, okay.
Yeah, and mortality. So fewer deaths, fewer sickness. Sounds lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah, except it comes with a price, which is the catch that as we age, if you looked, almost every guy would have cancer in his prostate by age 90 or so. So there's a lot of that slow smoldering, I love the term indolent cancer.
Yeah.
So we've been finding a lot of those cancers as well. So while we've dropped the death rate, we've unfortunately over-treated a bunch of guys who would have died of something else.
I see. So, in other words, this really is a problem for those who are beyond 70 and 80 years old?
No. So we use it really to screen for guys in 50s and 60s, people who would have a good life expectancy. You got to have at least 10 years left, you think, in someone's life to bother looking for disease that is usually slow.
Right.
So, okay, great. We found guys early. We cured some guys of prostate cancer. We overtreated a bunch of guys. Some people look at that problem and say, oh my gosh, you've overtreated too many guys. We shouldn't screen anyone. And some people say, well, maybe we should just use it differently. Maybe we should be pickier about who we screen, who we biopsy.
And who sets the guidelines?
Well, the big guidelines came from this U.S. Preventive Services Task Force. It's out of, I'm assuming, D.C. someplace. And they looked at this cost versus benefit ratio and said, too high of a cost. So that's a national standard. We find that many primary care docs and a lot of urologists have not particularly followed the standard. People are still getting screened.
Yeah.
And somewhat for better, we think, if we're using that test better. But we need a better test. It's still kind of an iffy test. It's not a black and white test.
So is this somewhat analogous to the debate about mammograms?
It is, actually. And so a lot of mammograms are done earlier in age. It's for women who should have at least a good life expectancy before you're looking for an early breast cancer. I got to admit, that's not a field I know a lot about.
Right.
But it's a very analogous kind of a screening problem.
We talk urology today on this Medical Monday. Ray Graff in for Alan Chartok. Dr. Paul Pietro is our guest. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Roderick in Troy. Roderick, you're on.
Yes. I'm 83 in very good health, but I do have a problem at night of getting up frequently to visit the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
I have been prescribed Tamsulosin.
Yes.
One tablet a day, one capsule a day.
Yes, yes.
And reading the danger warnings, I am concerned about the effect it might possibly have on my eyes. And I use my eyes a great deal. I do a very large amount of reading. I'm also doing some writing.
Mm-hmm.
So I have gotten mixed signals on this. My personal care, primary care doctor thinks it's okay, but pharmacist I consulted was not so sure. So unless I have a clear understanding of what it does and doesn't do, I'm not taking it. I'm currently beginning to take saw palmetto.
We got like an hour just on your call alone. So
the show is fairly brief, so, let's do a...
No, there's lots of different pieces to that. So I have to just get on quickly in my soapbox. Unfortunately, salt palmetto has never really been shown to do much benefit. And two really nicely randomized, placebo-controlled, double-blinded studies run out of a branch of the NIH. We're looking for complementary medicines. Never been shown to really help. So you can save a few bucks on the salt palmetto. I'm sure we'll get a flurry of phone calls about that.
You bet you will.
But it just doesn't work very well. There may be some other better herbal supplement, but that's not
And it. How much science has been done?
Pretty good stuff. Really done out of a complementary division branch of the NIH.
Okay.
All right. So I got to get that off my chest. So,
all right.
So Tamsulosin, we've been using that medication for 2 decades. It's widely used. It's generally really well tolerated. Biggest potential side effects to worry about are dizziness. We call it orthostasis when you sit or stand up from a quick sitting, and then you're standing.
Is that a low blood pressure thing?
Yeah, the blood pressure drops and people can get dizzy or lightheaded. So be careful with that transition. We usually tell people to watch out the first week or so they're taking it. And the other issues about the eyes, there is an interesting problem for folks who take Tamsulosin that it can make cataract surgery more difficult.
Huh, why? And
it creates this intraoperative floppy iris syndrome.
Well, I'm sorry I asked.
Yeah, and this is kind of news to us. The ophthalmologist started questioning us, hey, what's this effect? Do you guys know about this? And they saw it sooner than the urologist did. You know, most ophthalmologists know about this problem. There are a few extra steps they can take to prevent that intraoperative problem. I'm not an ophthalmologist, but they can give you more details about that. And they know to screen for that now before people come for cataract surgery. So if you have cataracts, if you're planning on having cataract surgery in the near future, you take care of that first, and then you start the prostate medication.
All right. Roderick, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. We're joined today by Dr. Paul Pietro of Premier Medical Group of the Hudson Valley, and we talk urology on this Medical Monday. Chris in Beacon, you're next. Chris.
Hi. I have a question about Flomax and some of the more organic products that are said to be comparable.
Right.
I was given Flomax a couple of years ago and stopped using it after a while and started using another organic product because it wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't working to the point that I felt was really effective. I started using an organic product and got amazing results in like 3 months.
Okay, what is Flomax supposed to do, Doc?
Well, actually, Flomax is Tamsulosin, the same medication that we just talked about.
All
it's
right.
A generic name versus the brand name. Flomax is the brand name. Yeah.
So I just, I used this product for like 3 months, and the change was dramatic. And I've actually been using it ever since. So I just was curious as to I don't want to give the name of the product that I use, but I just wanted to comment that I got much, much better results with this organic material, organic product than Flomax.
Yeah. Well, there's organic products, so that's a very large potential thing. So what's in this stuff, which is one of my issues that you'll find a lot of the allopaths, the Western medicine docs have with the herbal and the organic stuff, is they're not FDA tested. We don't always know what's in them.
it's hard to know what part might be helping or not. I mean, they all have these proprietary formulations, so hard to know exactly what might be helping you.
This one has like 2 dozen different things.
Yeah, right. So for me, good luck picking that out over a radio show.
Yeah.
But I might say that there are some interesting complementary stuff, herbal stuff that can be helpful for urinary symptoms. We've seen some relief from bee pollen extract and quercetin for some prostatitis relief, so inflammation of the prostate, and it's possible that's really what's helping you rather than the Flomax.
That was actually what my original diagnosis was chronic prostatitis.
And that's a tough, frankly, that's a tough condition to treat. So if you found that perhaps it's the bee pollen extract that's doing it for you, then, have at it. We're happy. We're as happy as you are that you got relief at that point.
Chris, thanks a lot for the call. Our number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. It's Medical Monday. Alan on an off day today. Ray Graff in for Alan. We'll take a break. We'll be right back with Dr. Paul Pietro and your calls.
Support comes from Ellis Medicine, providing comprehensive inpatient and outpatient health care in Schenectady and Southern Saratoga counties. EllisMedicine.org. The 2015 Saratoga Showcase of Homes, celebrating 20 years of new homes from builders in the Saratoga region, September 19th through October 4th. SaratogaShowcaseOfHomes.com for tickets. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com. John Keel Music, offering wind and string instrument rentals with school delivery to upstate New York and western New England, locally owned and operated since 1930. JohnKeelMusic.com. And from Ali, the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at Berkshire Community College, offering over 20 classes on literature, science, history, the arts, and more throughout the Berkshires. BerkshireOlli.org.
Hey, don't forget about the WAMC lockbox. It's now open. Well, it's still locked, but there's a hole in it for you to put your money, and you can find out at WAMC.org. We got a fun drive coming up, I believe starts October 5th. It's Monday morning, 6 a.m., bright and early. Every dollar raised in the lockbox now shortens the fun drive. So make your pledge. WAMC.org is the website. You'll see a banner ad, I believe, that has the lockbox. Click on that, you'll find out more. Our guest today on Medical Monday, Dr. Paul Pietro, a premier medical group of the Hudson Valley. What's your biggest, aside from dealing with everyday challenges with all of your patients, what's the biggest challenge in urology today?
There's two ways to take that. The biggest problem actually is for medicine, I think it's the electronic records. There's a lot of changes being driven from above, from CMS and insurance companies. I just want to close the door and have a conversation with the patients. It's
tough to do that, just that now, isn't it?
It is. And so I know it's not what you're asked, but that's a real challenge, I think, for medical care in general now. For urology, with this continuing ongoing mash of how to handle prostate cancer, we've made some really amazing strides, not me, but researchers and stuff, with newer, later stage prostate cancer medications that are working better. We have new tools. Should we be using MRIs for prostate biopsies? Maybe it's better, but it's a lot more expensive. There's a lot of really interesting questions right now.
Well, that also ties in with insurance. It's better, but it's much more expensive.
Should we be doing it for everybody? Should we not be doing it? So you want to provide the best care for your patient. You just can't run the system dry in 2 months. So there's a lot of really interesting questions being raised, what we should use, when to use it, what's going to be the best sequence. Prostate cancer is still kind of exciting.
Our number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Our guest, Dr. Paul Pietro. Back to the phones we go. Jim in Matamoros. Jim, you're on.
What disease conditions are likely to produce various types of urinary gas?
Well, I'm going to do a little bit of a dodge on that. Urinary casts are typically produced in kidney diseases, sort of medical kidney diseases. I'm the plumber, right? So I take care of plumbing problems. People can't pee, their kidney has a blockage in it. But there are various medical conditions, various inflammatory conditions, glomerular nephritides, that'll create casts, red cell casts, white cell casts. That's more of a great question for a nephrologist.
All right, Jim, thank you very much. Over to Cindy in Queensbury. Cindy, you're on.
Yes. The reason I'm calling is if we had followed the general guidelines of PSA testing, my husband would be dead. At 57, his doctor decided to do a PSA because of his family history.
Yeah.
And let me see. The PSA was 52. Oof. And the Gleason was 9.
Yeah, that's some tougher stuff.
They redid the tests. They couldn't believe it. They redid the tests. Nope, that was it. So,
but if he had a family history, wouldn't they ordinarily do that test early?
Well, not in the early 90s. 65.
Right.
65.
Yeah, so
you
that
don't
was...
touch him, you don't even talk about it till 65. And he just did it because he just felt that there was enough of a family history, even though the male members were like in their 80s when they were diagnosed. He still felt that it was enough that he should check it. Now, my husband had a radical prostatectomy, followed up with radiation, and he has had zero PSA or undetectable for 16 years.
That is an excellent story for Gleason 9 and a PSA of 52.
We were about to go celebrate our first wedding anniversary in Florida when he got the call because he'd gone in for his physical.
Yeah, no, those are some scarier numbers. You know, the catch always, right? So I sit down, I alluded to this before, I sit down with a patient and it's that patient. And we have a decision to make with that guy about, are we going to check his PSA, we can do a rectal exam, we can do a prostate biopsy. So it's individual. And like this larger task force looks at the entire national population. So,
right.
So if you look at large populations, they see some argument for not testing people. But of course, it sounds great unless you're that guy.
I don't know if it's somewhat like breast cancer where you can have maybe a more aggressive form.
Sure, there are more aggressive forms.
Exactly. I'm assuming you had a really aggressive form at 57.
What we really need is a better screening test that'll help us separate the wheat from the chaff early. Hey, this is a guy who could really harbor a more aggressive prostate cancer. He's someone we really want to check rather than a PSA, which is a bit scattershot and checks everybody.
Exactly. Well, at the time in the early 90s, there was not as much available.
We're still looking for a better one.
Cindy, thanks a lot for the call.
You're welcome.
I think it's kind of ironic. You had a Gleason test right after the honeymoon. You know, honeymooners. So what is the Gleason test?
So Gleason, Professor Gleason was a pathologist. And so he came up with a way to look at prostate cancer on a microscope slide and sort of rank the aggressiveness of that prostate cancer. Hey, this looks like a pattern that's more likely to be risky to a guy's health and life expectancy, or this is a pattern that's less aggressive. So the Gleason score just tells us how aggressive that prostate cancer may or may not be.
Our guest today is Dr. Paul Pietro of Premier Medical Group. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551 on this Medical Monday. Let's go over to Bob in West Taconic. Bob.
Yeah.
You're on.
Okay. Dr. Pietro, I'd just like to know what causes bladder stones. I've had some removed twice. Do they recur, and does diet affect them, the growth of those bladder stones?
Sure. So bladder stones historically were very related to diet. They were really common in the Middle Ages, and if you actually look at the Hippocratic Oath, it says, "I will not cut for stone." Those are bladder stones. The mortality rate of bladder stone surgery performed by butchers, by the way, butchers were surgeons, their mortality rate was like 80-90%. So really aren't supposed to be cutting out bladder stones historically.
Is that really in the Hippocratic Oath?
I will not cut for stone.
Wow.
Yeah. So historically, diet did have a lot to do with it. In our current era, bladder stones are really more caused by bladder outlet obstruction. So for guys, that really just means an enlarging prostate or a prostate that won't relax. The bladder and prostate don't function and coordinate so well anymore, so there's some stagnation of urine and stones can form in that stagnant pond. So if you don't change the drainage, if you don't change how well the bladder and prostate work, if you're still stagnant urine, then you're at risk of making stones even though you remove them. So you don't, unless you fix the problem, you will be at risk for making recurrent stones. So that means things like tamsulosin or finasteride to shrink the prostate and relax the prostate in reverse order. Surgery, a transurethral resection, a TURP, to scrape out the prostate so you can empty better and void better. There are options to get you emptying better so you avoid the stagnation and repeat stones.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, doctor.
Yes, sir.
Thanks, Bob. Let's go over to Steve in Chatham. Steve, you're on.
Yeah, I was wondering what your doctor's thoughts were on, I took 36 days of Cipro for prostatitis, and I've seen all these side effects on the computer that terrify people about the side effects on them with tendon ruptures. Is that common in your practice?
Okay, before you start, just tell everybody who doesn't know what Cipro is.
Oh, yeah, fine. So ciprofloxacin is a fluoroquinolone antibiotic. It works very nicely against gram-negatives that's more commonly found, gram-negative bacteria, in the urinary tract.
Okay.
So it is a medication we'll use for prostatitis, and yes, we'll oftentimes think about using it for a few weeks at a time for a gentleman we think has some prostatitis. So, you know, that's you. Cipro looks horrible on paper. There is a risk of tendonitis. We see it more with Levaquin, its brother drug, levofloxacin, ciprofloxacin, than with Cipro. You can be rashes, sun-induced rash.
All from an antibiotic.
All from a chemical compound we ingest, you know, purposely.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the antibiotic. So, you know, we use it all the time. And so to the urologist, it seems like it's a pretty safe drug, but there are some pretty scary potential side effects. For the most part, those are a pretty small minority and uncommon. You know, it's not a common problem. If we had a lot of side effects, we'd have to pick a different medication.
Is it 36 days an average time to take? I thought it maybe might have been much or a little.
Yeah, it's on the longish side, but it's pretty common to think about treating prostatitis for like a month. You know,
okay.
So that's just about a month.
Okay, yeah. I don't have any side effects, but I'm just concerned in the future, you know, with taking that certain drug, what it might do to the... I don't know if you've heard of any of that coming back at your, you know, but if you haven't, that makes me feel better.
No, I mean, we do hear about that. It's just a pretty low percentage of that, of those kind of problems.
Good.
Yeah.
Thanks, Steve. We appreciate the call. It's Vox Pop Medical Monday. Ray Graff in for Alan Shartok today. Number to call is 1-800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. We're joined today by Dr. Paul Pietro, a premier medical group of the Hudson Valley. And let's go to Jeff in North Bennington. Jeff.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Question. I had kidney stones about 4 years ago, waited a few months to see if they would pass. There was apparently one in each kidney. One of them, according to the CAT scan, was down at the bottom of the tube that drops down from the kidney, trying to get into the bladder but couldn't get out, so had that one removed. Apparently there was still a 2 millimeter or so size stone left in my left kidney, and I was wondering, would you go back every year basically and take x-rays to see if that's got big enough to see on the x-ray, or would you wait to see if it bothered you at some point in the future, or maybe it's even passed on its own by now? What do you think about follow-up?
I love this topic. This was part of my... I did a fellowship in kidney stone disease and those type of management, so I love this.
I've never seen so much glee elicited by kidney stones.
No, kidney stones. I love kidney stones.
This is good.
No, and I've got some chapters and things. This was part of my early days. Mm. So kidney stones, you know, from a follow-up standpoint, regarding the stone you have, 2 millimeters is pretty small, and if it decided to make a run for it at any point in time, it had got have about an 89% chance of passing on its own.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, they hurt. They're pretty horrible.
Sure.
If I had a dollar for every time some lady told me she'd rather have another baby than another stone,
right,
I could retire 6 months early.
Oh,
you know,
boy.
It'd be pretty awesome. So,
I'm assuming it hasn't passed and it's been 4 years that it's still there. But you know, the question is, do you go back every year?
Yeah. They're usually not so subtle, so you probably haven't passed it.
Right.
Now, for folks like yourself, I will periodically get a plain X-ray of the belly called a KUB.
Uh-huh.
You know, instead of a chest X-ray, they just drop it down and get just your belly.
Yeah.
And you can see small stones, medium stones on that. Smaller can be kind of hard to see. An ultrasound is a nice way to look for enlargement of the stones and any blockage of the plumbing without getting any radiation exposure.
Right.
CAT scan is best, but that's more radiation than you want as a screening test or a surveillance test.
Yes.
So maybe an annual KUB or ultrasound, if it's not changing, then you're set.
Well, I did 3 years ago. I went back for the first annual, and then I thought, well, you know, if it hasn't changed in a year and I'm drinking tons of water,
yeah,
and I'm kind of doing all the things that I think that I, you know, to do to keep it from getting larger, and it's not bothering me, I just have been taking a wait-and-see approach.
Yeah.
do you think that that's not prudent?
No, I think that's generally good. It's probably worth getting at least some surveillance imaging to make sure you're not growing new ones. You know, if we had another 2 hours, maybe we could talk about how to prevent kidney stones.
Maybe we'll just go on till 5 o'clock.
Or do another show on that.
Yeah, hey, you know we'll be back. Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Paul Pietro is our guest. So nowadays, do they just ultrasound those kidney stones into submission?
Well, we still have three basic ways for getting out kidney stones, depending on size and location. So for preemptive treatment, we still might consider using extracorporeal shockwave lithotripsy. That's the sound wave, the sonic wave therapy.
Yeah.
We do a fair amount of ureteroscopy, so fiber optic telescope passed through the urethra into the bladder up the tube.
Yikes.
That sounds like that's what that gentleman had done.
Yeah.
And for really large stones up in the kidney particularly, we'll do what's called a percutaneous approach. We'll pass a needle into the kidney through the skin. This is in the operating room.
Right.
A wire, a balloon, a tube. We actually can pass a telescope from the outside in through like a 1 centimeter track by the finger width.
That's amazing.
And we can grind up and suction out the stones.
So you do it all from the outside.
So there's very little, open stone surgery where you actually make an incision and cut somebody's flank. I've never seen it.
Wow.
I haven't practiced 15 years.
So it's all like that operation game?
The little hand bone.
Yeah,
the little
buzzer goes off.
Exactly.
Nice. Sorry, let's go back to the line and Peter in Kingston. Peter.
Yes.
You're right.
Hi.
Yep.
Okay, hi. I have very high PSA numbers I've had for years, and because of that I've had two biopsies done, and they didn't find anything, and I continue to have high numbers, and now I have it was probably BPH, and I took a supplement that was advertised on the radio. It was super beta prostate. It's beta cholesterol.
Beta cytosterol, right.
Yeah, and that seemed to work really well for relieving my, urges to urinate frequently. I was just wondering, and that's, fairly expensive. It's not something that a doctor prescribes.
Right.
And I'm wondering if there's anything that does what that does that's over the counter that's not through, a high markup internet type company.
Yeah. Well, can I get back on my soapbox again?
Here we go.
About the herbal supplements, and they're just hard to tell for us. So you've got the MD, a DO. If you're practicing that kind of medicine, we truly try to base things on studies, clinical trials, randomized trials, placebo blinded, and unfortunately, the herbal companies are not held to that same standard. So we're kind of, anecdotally, if it works for you, that's great. The science behind beta cytosterol is just not been well founded in our literature. There's a whole herbal literature and trials and magazines that they'll write about that stuff, but it hasn't really made it fully into the urology mainstream. My comment to that gentleman earlier, for folks with prostatitis or chronic inflammation of the prostate, there is some okay evidence that bee pollen extract and quercetin actually can have some positive effect. And that may be what you had noticed as well, that you're really getting some alleviation of the inflammation of the prostate gland through some of those herbal things. But I can't rattle off five great randomized trials that really show that this is an excellent medication. So you're really, it is all over the counter. You might go try one of your local health food stores and look for a reasonable, reputable company that actually provides what they say they are.
All right. Peter, thanks a lot for the call. So these supplements you see advertised or hear advertised, they're basically herbal remedies?
Yeah.
So as I understand it, they all say these claims have not been evaluated by the FDA.
Right.
Okay.
But it always cracks me up because, of course, they're claiming some sort of medical benefit, but then there's a little box that says they're not. So I'm not quite sure how they
However,
how that flies.
There is a long
yes.
hundreds and thousands of year history in Eastern medicine
yes.
of using herbal
yes.
remedies. So how does the twain meet between Western medicine
yeah.
and Eastern medicine, where they've had success, perhaps not with the scientific, clinical
research that we have in the West.
Yeah, well, then we're always sort of looking at this somewhat anecdotally. So individuals, if they have a nice response, then I'm not going to try to talk them out of their response.
Yeah.
But there's no reason why these companies couldn't take these products and really run them through more rigorous randomized trials, clinical trials, and really prove the efficacy. And then, you know, I'm on board. You show me that this stuff has really been proven to work well in a nice controlled trial.
So that's up to the company. That's not up to the FDA?
Well, the FDA does not oversee herbal supplements. And that's the Congress to decide whether that's something that FDA needs to do.
Interesting.
Yeah, they the herbal companies want a big old a little end run a few decades ago, 20 years ago.
I mean, my observation is you see the ads for various herbal remedies, and maybe they work. Maybe we hear from people all the time that they do.
Yeah.
But one of the things, when you see an ad for a drug that has FDA approval, you hear a horrifying list of side effects.
Right, I'm
sure there are side effects with some of these herbal remedies as well.
You'll just never really know. And so I'm also humbled, and I say I don't know all the answers.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, the medications we have don't treat everyone's problems 100% of the time without side effects. So people, I think, use some of these remedies because they seem appealing and because clearly we don't have all the answers either. You know, so it's a big open door for alternative therapies.
It is Medical Monday. Our guest is Dr. Paul Pietro of Premier Medical Group. We talk urology today, and the home stretch, believe it or not, already is on the way. We'll be back with more of your calls in a moment.
Support comes from the Urological Institute Urologic Oncology Services, prostate cancer specialist providing comprehensive care for all stages of prostate cancer, featuring 3D diagnostic imaging and advanced robotics, urologyoncology.com. Nathan Litauer Hospital, Gloversville, New York, less than 50 minutes from Albany, offering minimally invasive procedures for back pain with Dr. Ja'an Shen, NLH.org for more information. Old Castle Theater Company, downtown Bennington, Vermont, presenting The Lion in Winter by James Goldman. Performances by Nigel Gore and Elizabeth Aspenleader, September 25th through October 11th. OldCastleTheater.org. And from Apex Solar Power, Queensbury, New York. Locally owned, installing solar panels, solar hot water, solar pool heating. ApexSolarPower.com for information.
Vox Pop on WAMCA. It's a Medical Monday. Ray Graff in for Alan Shartok, having an interesting discussion today with Dr. Paul Pietro of Premier Medical Group. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Time is now fleeting, so get your calls in fast. Harvey in Hurley. Harvey.
Yes.
You're on.
Okay, thank you. I've suffered from overactive bladder for many years. Finally, in February of this year, I've had Botox injections into my bladder, and they did reduce the urgency and the frequency. Now, that positive effect sort of wore off, and I've had a second Botox injection into the bladder in August, mid-August, which had absolutely no effect, nothing positive, nothing negative, and after it, I still have overactive bladder with frequent urinations during the night. Now, I'm considering another Botox injection. The manufacturer says wait at least 12 weeks, and this would not be 12 weeks if I did it pretty recently. I did it in August, so my question is, are there unordinary negative impacts by doing it more frequently than the 12 weeks?
Well, that'd be off-label, which is always a whole nother conversation with you and your doc.
Correct.
Off-label meaning using it for a different purpose?
No, I guess I didn't use that term as precisely.
Just so use it more frequently than they recommend.
It would be. So the manufacturer has to give a recommended route and their own warnings. So if to use it more frequently would be breaking sort of the manufacturer's advice.
Oh, I see.
So Botox is interesting. It paralyzes muscles. You know, of course the Hollywood types use it to get rid of their wrinkles.
Right.
It has some interesting applications, like for treating migraines. The neurologists talk about that, and like muscle spasms. So basically, Botox injected into the wall of the bladder is trying to settle down overactive spasms and contractions of the bladder muscle. It's usually done with a telescope. We can do it in the office, most times awake. There's some numbing lidocaine in there. It will wear off, and so we do normally expect that it's going to wear off with anywhere from 3 to 6 months. To do it early, you're really going to have a conversation with your doc about whether the risks outweigh the benefits. And the risks of Botox in general are urinary tract infections from us poking around the bladder. And if it relaxes the bladder really well, 1 in 20 folks will have a risk of going into retention. They can't urinate on their own because the bladder is so relaxed, which, of course, will wear off over time as the drug usually wears off. So
3 months would be a long time between visits to the John.
Well, you'd have to catheterize, either catheterize yourself or have a bladder catheter or something. It usually wears; it starts to wear off as you go. But it's an interesting medication. It's given us a few other ways to treat folks with really troublesome frequency and urgency of urination.
And a side benefit is you have a very young-looking bladder, which is really terrific.
If you were to look inside.
Yeah, there you go. All right, back to the phones and Annie and Rhinebeck. Annie, you're on.
Yes, hi, thank you. My husband has BPH. About 10 years ago, he was about 55. He had a modified TURP. Before the procedure and after, he was on tamsulosin and finasteride. I'm not sure, but they wanted to continue the medications after the procedure. Now, 10 years later, he's on Medicare. And although he was taking additionally over the last maybe 4 or 5 years low-dose Cialis, that's no longer covered on Medicare, so it's quite expensive. But it does help him. He would even take it maybe every 2-3 days, and it helps him urinate. Otherwise, he has difficulty. We don't know if there's anything else that might be available to help him.
Tamsulosin, we've talked about once or twice, and that's that alpha blocker relaxes the prostate. Finasteride shrinks the prostate over time. And yes, you're right. Cialis has been used and FDA approved now to treat voiding symptoms. It's usually a low dose, 5 milligrams, which is lower than the erectile assistance doses.
Right. But they give us a hard time about it.
Medicare hates paying for Cialis. They say that entertainment is your own dime. Regardless of why you use it, even though it's FDA approved for BPH, it is hard to get it covered for that. If he had a transurethral resection of the prostate somewhat reduced, there's a good chance that some of that has grown back.
Sure, it's been about 10 years.
Yeah, so it's probably time for an evaluation to see the shape of prostate configuration. Is there some stricture? Has some of it grown back? He actually might even be a candidate for some office-based procedures or even a redo resection of the prostate.
Okay.
What do you mean by an office procedure?
Well, there's some heat-based or there's some newer techniques for treating BPH without actually having to go through the whole formal TURP.
That'd be nice, yeah.
Yeah. So I
have no other medications.
Not for the prostate itself. It probably requires some better questioning with your husband to understand the nature of his symptoms and how he might go at it.
Annie, thanks a lot for the call. Well, here we go. The classic intersection between insurance and medicine.
Yes, it's a problem every day.
This came in via email. What might cause recurrent urinary tract infections in a woman over 60?
That's a very large question. That's a very broad topic.
So you need more information.
Well, yeah, don't we always? But the UTIs. So it's bacteria hanging out in the bladder and having more of a good time than they're supposed to. There's probably bacteria that go back and forth fairly routinely in the course of a day. Mm-hmm. We do see two sort of bumps in the road, so to speak, for when women are more likely to get urinary tract infections. One is younger, 20s, sexually active. And then that tends to quiet down for some decades. And the second general bump is women postmenopausal, and plus or minus still sexually active at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So 60 postmenopause, once estrogen disappears, the urethra kind of dries up a little bit. It's like a sponge. Instead of being soft and supple, it gets a little hard and crunchy, and it doesn't keep the bacteria out as well.
Yeah.
So it is a little more common in women as they get a little older. So increasing fluids, we actually will sometimes use cranberry. There actually is some reasonable data for cranberry tablets.
Well, that's
to help
an old.
It is, and the science isn't great, but it's pretty good.
Yeah.
And then there's an interesting technique which might sometimes even use vaginal estrogen to help make that urethra a little spongier again, a little fuller.
Okay.
And that clearly would have to be discussed with the physician,
right,
you know, in person and exam.
All right, let's go back to the phones. 1-800-348-2551. Dawn in Chatham. Dawn, you're on.
Hi, thank you. I just have one comment before my question. I once was put on Cipro for what was thought to be a urinary tract infection. I was put on Cipro before the culture came back, and I had a very adverse reaction. I had a massive nosebleed and a loss of consciousness, so I've never been on Cipro again.
I think you should never take Cipro again. I'd have to agree
absolutely
with you on that. Absolutely.
My question is, I've had problems with my bladder since my early 20s, and it's been diagnosed as interstitial cystitis. And then about 6 years ago, I had a massive vestibular loss, so a neurological problem, and I became incontinent at one point, and the doctor thought it was my eyes. But here's the thing is that I went back to this urologist who diagnosed me with interstitial cystitis, but his specialty really is prostate, the prostate. And it's really hard for women to find urologists who deal with female bladder problems, because the prostate issue is so widespread, and I believe that the feeling is, or what I've found is that urologists mostly deal with prostate issues. How do we rectify that?
Is that fair or unfair characterization, doctor?
Oh, it depends on your point of view and who you're asking.
Okay,
there is an rising percentage of women coming out of urology training programs. It had been
fabulous.
Yeah, and so we're seeing more and more women come out. And it's interesting. I just read some article last week. So women who coming out of urology training programs, they think they're gonna practice whatever subspecialty or general urology they're trained for. And when they get into practice, they're just sort of inundated with women looking for a female urologist.
Mm-hmm.
So regardless of what they were planning on how to practice, they end up sort of by de facto seeing a lot. So there are some increasing women coming out. I have to get a little defensive. Is it, as a urologist,
I've just had problems finding female urologists or urologists specifically dealing with interstitial cystitis or neurological issues related to the eyes, because the eyes are related to the bladder, and it just, It's been hard. That's all.
Yeah. Well, there are some folks out there who have the time and patience to go through the IC. And IC is a difficult diagnosis. We don't really exactly know what it is, but we recognize the pattern. And there are some subspecialists who really see more female urologists. I know there's a doctor too up in Albany who do female urology most as the bulk of their practice. I have a partner in Poughkeepsie who sees females as the bulk of his practice. So there are some folks out there who are really dedicated to that sub-branch.
Dawn, thanks a lot. 1-800-348-2551. We're joined today by Dr. Paul Pietro of Premier Medical Group of the Hudson Valley. And over to Bob in Springfield. Bob.
Hi.
You're on.
Should I explain what I've been through to get where I am?
If you can do it in about 30 to 40 seconds, then go ahead.
Well, basically, I have what feels like a urinary infection, but it won't grow any culture. It burns when I urinate, and it stings on the tip of my penis, and they're not, I've been put on Bactrim to help, but it seems like they don't want to give me an antibiotic for it again for some reason.
Yeah, well, we're trying to, of course, it really depends on the details and what's in your urine and what's happened before. But we're trying to be better stewards of antibiotics, and so we've all gotten a little stingier about it. There's a real problem with increasing resistance of bacteria to antibiotics, and we've used them maybe perhaps too freely. I suspect your docs are probably trying to be a little more cautious, so we're not just giving them out without some better, cause or some better proof, at least in their minds. Depending on what happened, I guess we see in the note that some sort of biopsy in May, but I definitely want to get back and talk to your doc. There's some residual inflammation for whatever reason going on inside your bladder. And I think it's going to be a little hard to get over without knowing more of the details.
Bob, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go over to Rex in Pittsfield. Rex, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. I was just curious. I've been dealing with this problem for over a year. Unfortunately, what I have is I have a swollen scrotum. They have done CAT scans. The doctors in my area keep telling me I have a thing called hydrocele.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But the problem is that it's not just fluid anymore. It's the tissues in my scrotum are also hard and inundated with water.
Yeah.
And I just don't seem to be getting any good answers. I mean, like I said, I've been dealing this with for over a year.
Yeah. Rex, have you seen a urologist?
I have, and okay. He has been very little help. He was the one. I mean, this was his. He told me to elevate it.
Right. Well, yeah, because it's
easier said than done.
Easier said than done, of course.
Right. I mean, exactly. I mean, yeah, it's not like holding your arm above your head.
Yeah, that's right. Good. We got
no,
it.
No, but there's two major potential things. Just, you know, off. Okay. Because I have to use my disclaimer every time, but I have to see you and examine and understand better. But two sort of things come to mind. One is a hydrocele, as you mentioned, is fluid within an ultrasound versus fluid that's really settled in the scrotum, in the skin of the scrotum. And that's usually dependent. So, you know, people get swollen ankles at the end of the day if their heart has some, got some congestive heart failure.
Yeah.
They get swollen ankles or the kidneys aren't working so well. They get fluid overloaded and it tends to settle whatever is lowest. And when you're sitting down, guess what's one of your lowest parts?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, so you got a couple of ways to try to treat that. One would be to, you know, look at your fluid status. If you haven't seen a cardiologist, if you haven't seen your primary care doc, make sure your heart's working well enough. Make sure your fluid status is okay. Make sure there's not some element of congestive heart failure that's adding to fluid retention. And then I got to say, in general, the urologist is right. Is the way to get it out of that spot, if it's just is really to elevate it and try to get that to not be the lowest part of your body.
All right, Rex, thanks a lot. We've got to move along here. Appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Sherry. Is it Sherry or Sherry in Malta?
It's Sherry.
You're on.
Thank you. My question is, on two occasions, about 10 days apart, I had a little blood in my urine for probably 6 months now or so, on and off. Toward the end of urinating, I get a feeling I call pressure.
Mm-hmm.
When I actually had the blood, it felt painful, but I haven't had any burning or anything like that. Doctor saw me, my primary care, they did a CAT scan, they did an ultrasound, they gave me Bactrim for UTI,
yeah.
Which I've never had before. They did find a cyst on an ovary, but my gynecologist said that one was that, so I actually just got an appointment today with the urologist for October 1st.
But perfect.
I haven't been having any symptoms since, really. But once in a while, I get that feeling of almost like at the end of urinating, it feels like an urgency to go
yeah.
at the end of urinating. It's just, it's very unusual, and the blood made me nervous,
right.
You know.
So I'm glad you're seeing a urologist. That's definitely in your future. And then I got to warn you, you're probably going to have a cystoscopy at some point, which is a telescopic and endoscopic evaluation of the bladder.
Is that an in-office?
It's an office procedure. We pass a telescope through the urethra, look around the bladder. And so when people have visible blood in their urine, we run a fairly routine check. It's not a lot of thinking what we're going to do. We want to get some pictures of your upper urinary tract. That usually means a CAT scan with contrast that they've let run out through the ureter so we can watch the plumbing as it comes all the way down.
Yeah.
So we check the upper urinary tract, kidneys for stones, masses, cysts, blockages, other things we might need to treat. And then we almost always will do a cystoscopy, which is look inside the bladder. And those things are really designed to make sure we don't miss the big stuff. Tumors, polyps, cancers, stones, things that are causing blockage. They're not all horrible, but they can cause some trouble.
Okay.
And so, yes, I'm glad you've had a CAT scan. Your urologist will make sure that it was a contrasted, loaded, and that they got the ureters included. And then your urologist is very likely to recommend you'll go to a cystoscopy.
Sherry, we're out of time here. Thank you for calling.
All right, thank you.
Appreciate it. And thanks to everybody who called in today. That was a fast hour, Doc.
That was a fast hour.
Nice to have you here. We want to thank, once again, Dr. Paul Pietro of Premier Medical Group of the Hudson Valley. And thank you all for your calls. Great calls today. And we appreciate them very much. Thanks for listening. Thanks to, what's his name at the controls? Oh, yeah, it's Zach Malloy. Well done, Zach, getting rid of that 60-cycle hum. Very nice work. You'll get a gold star. Thanks to Joe Makowitz, who answered the calls, producer Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Alan back in the saddle here on Vox Pop. It'll be an open forum. Stay tuned now for a news update.